This is Pure Decking, show number 379 for Thursday, February the 13th. Just as a reminder, there are no hot singles in your area if you're clicking on those banner ads. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and freaking people out, telling them I got this head cold in China. I'm Marps. Tonight I'm drinking bourbon for self-medication reasons. And tonight we have Mad Men. What is up, Mad Men? Madman is currently slumped over the keyboard dead. Are you? What's up?
Yes, or I'm muted because I was coughing. I also have not been to China. And I'm drinking beer, which might not be as enough medication. I may need to switch to scotch.
All right, are you? Have you got your woohoo flu?
No, I don't have the woohoo flu, but I have been doing a new mixtape, The Sounds of the Woohoo Flu, Electric Boogaloo 2. It's dulcet tones of Morps and Madman's coughing for the last two fucking weeks.
Joy.
It's on iTunes for $1.50.
Sad part is he's made $13. Anyways, show may be short today, as you can may or may not be able to tell. I don't know how long my voice is going to hold out, so...
and forgiveness for missing cough buttons today.
Yes.
The luxury of doing radio when you've got a head cold.
Yep.
But I don't have that.
And
so I've got no excuse.
I apologize for last week's show. I mean, I know I said I'd probably miss it anyways, but... oh, man, did I pick a bad day to fly back. Yeah, lots of delays and lots of flight issues.
Hey, at least you got to watch a lot of CNN.
Got to watch a lot of CNN. Then I had to drive home in a blizzard after being exhausted from being thrown around in the ass end of a plane. It was great fun.
Best $1.75 we ever spent, are you? Having some dude flying a drone around the airport for hours.
This homeless will do anything for soup.
Soup. So, moving on. Let's just get right into it here. The first article I wanted to talk about tonight is from Ars Technica. And our headline is, Man Refused to Decrypt Hard Drives is Free After 4 Years in Jail. A Philadelphia man has been freed after a federal appeals court ruled that his continued detention was violating federal law. Francis Rawls, a former police officer, had been in jail since 2015 when a federal judge held him in contempt for failing to decrypt two hard drives taken from his home. The government believes they contain child pornography. In 2015, law enforcement raided Rawls' home and seized two smartphones, a Mac laptop, and two hard drives. Prosecutors were able to gain access to the laptop, and police say forensics analysis showed Rawls downloading child porn and saving it to external drives. But the drives themselves were encrypted, preventing the police from accessing the downloaded files. A judge ordered Rawls to decrypt the hard drives. In his recent ruling in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, described what happened next. Rawls stated that he could not remember the passwords necessary to decrypt the hard drives and entered several incorrect passwords during the forensics examination. That's dumb. You should not let people enter passwords directly, because if they are intentionally entering bad passwords, a lot of encrypted drives have self-destruct functions that if you enter bad passwords like 5 or 10 times, they just, you know, destroy themselves, format everything, whatever. So letting them punch in the wrong password multiple times is not a good idea. Also, it sounds like in this case they didn't need to prove what was on the drives because he wasn't contesting ownership.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds to me like they already had him dead to rights on the kiddie porn, so...
Sounds like he wasn't contesting ownership of the drives, but that doesn't prove that there's kiddie porn on those drives.
Well, they said they had logs showing them him saving
downloaded
kiddie porn.
Downloaded to a drive.
Yeah.
That's not, that external drive isn't either of those. I don't have that drive because I wasn't the one downloading kiddie porn on that computer. You're showing that computer was downloading kiddie porn. I have relatives that come to my house. I have friends that come to my house. I sometimes let them use the computer, and I don't set over their shoulder.
The judge held Rawls in contempt and ordered him imprisoned. Rawls challenged his imprisonment, arguing it violated his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. In 2017, the Third Circuit Court rejected his argument. The Fifth Amendment gives witnesses a right not to testify against themselves. Rawls argued that producing a password for the hard drives would amount to an admission that he owned the drives. But if he already put in wrong passwords multiple times, isn't that not... anyways. But the Third Circuit rejected that argument. It held that the government already had ample evidence that Rawls owned the drives and knew the passwords required to decrypt them. So ordering Rawls to decrypt the drives wouldn't give the government any information it didn't already have. Of course, the contents of the drive might incriminate Rawls, but the contents of the hard drive are not considered testimony for Fifth Amendment purposes. No, that's considered evidence. That's an interesting take, though. The contents of the drive is not considered testimony, it's considered evidence. But if you're not contesting ownership, giving up the password is considered testimony? I mean...
I'm not a lawyer. I'm not
either. I don't think they know the answer to this, which is why we keep talking about it.
I think a lot of rules around this stuff are still being made. And I still believe smaller law enforcement agencies don't have best practice down.
Oh, I'm sure that's the case.
Of letting him enter the password. Things like that. That's not best practice. I think a lot of law enforcement still trying to get their head around the whole new technology thing. And the minute they do one, course about it, the tech changes instantly.
Oh, sure.
They're always chasing their tail when it comes to this sort of crime, especially with better and better encryption. Smaller and smaller drives that can hold more, things like that, easier to hide.
Oh, yeah. And I mean... Plus, too, they're not even talking about what type of encryption we're looking at here. Was this something like an iron key that, is forensically sound and used by the government? And, well, actually, iron key went out of business. I think they got bought up by Kingston. But they used to be considered that. But then you've got several that come with, software solutions. And you get stuff that's like, the Microsoft encryption for a drive or the Mac encryption for drives.
Well, if they can't get through it, then it's probably not one of your generics.
They might not have been trying. From the prosecutor's standpoint, the dude's in prison. Why waste the resources? You either give us what we want, we'll have a rock solid case to put him in prison, or he'll sit in prison.
Yeah, I like what Psychro said in the IRC there. Use TrueCrypt or VeraCrypt, and use the plausible deniability encryption, which is where your encrypted drive has two partitions, and which one you see depends on which password you enter. So the idea is you have one password that has the horrible in it, and the other password, is like your taxes and other things that you would be, encrypting for understandable reasons. And then
you'd have to be
pressed, for that, you give up the password that only has like your taxes and stuff in it.
You'd be a pretty sad forensic investigator if you didn't realize that, though.
Well,
the drive is 300, 300 gig, and we only have 100 on this partition. What the fuck?
Well, no, that's not how the TrueCrypt program works. I've looked at this thing before.
Okay, so it shows the entire drive?
It shows
with nothing on
right,
it?
Right. It shows everything on the drive. And because the whole thing's encrypted, if you're looking at it from the plain text side, there's literally no way to tell. What's used and what's not, because the whole thing just shows full. And then on the plausible deniability, both sides show however much free space it would show. I suppose I've not played with it enough. Like if you filled up one of the I call it a partition. It's not really a partition. But if you filled it up, would it start overwriting what's in the other one to protect the existence of it? Or would it stop to protect the data? Given how TrueCrypt's written, I'm betting it would override it to protect the existence of the plausible deniability partition. Of course, the thought is that you would never actually fill it up. But personally, I always like the hardware encryption, the ones like where the flash drives actually got like the data keys on it to punch in your pins. Always get a kick out of those. Especially because they're not, you know, that's something I always run into with encrypted flash drives. It's like you use the Mac encryption, about the only thing that's going to read it, it's a Mac, you know? And if I need to jump between machines, well, that's a problem. So
he's out of prison. So he served four years for child pornography. Does he have to register as a sex offender now?
He hadn't been found guilty yet. I don't know.
Back to the story. After losing that appeal, Rawls raised another challenge. The federal statute that allows judges to hold witnesses in contempt for refusing to testify, passed in 1970, states that no event shall such contempt confinement exceed 18 months. The government argued this provision didn't apply to Rawls because he was a suspect, not a witness. Also, the rule appeal applies to a proceeding before or ancillary to any court or grand jury. But because the government hasn't formally charged him with a crime, the government argued there was no court proceeding underway. That's really ant-fucking there, isn't it? I mean, from the intent of the law. Last week, a three-judge panel of the Third Circuit Court rejected the argument in a 2-1 vote. The court's two... I hate how it comes down to, like, one guy has to decide this shit, right? I guess that's our system, but...
Yeah, but they don't know which guy whenever they're deciding it.
That's true. The court's two-judge majority held that Congress had intended for the 18-month limitation to apply broadly to any legal proceeding, not just a formal trial. And while Rawls was the suspect in the case, he was also a witness. The practical result is that, at least in federal court, someone can only be imprisoned for 18 months for refusing to open an encrypted device. That's probably a harsh enough penalty to induce most people to comply with decryption orders, but suspects in child porn cases might be tempted to forget passwords for their encrypted devices if doing so could save them from conviction and a much longer prison term. The ruling might not help Rawls very much, however, the government says it has piles of other evidence suggesting that Rawls possessed child porn. For example, last week's ruling notes that Rawls' own sister testified that Rawls had shown her hundreds of images of child pornography on the encrypted external hard drives, including videos of children who were nude engaged of acts with other children.
God, I hope she should have turned him in after the first image. The fuck's she doing looking at hundreds? She's complicit.
It's sometimes kind of hard to get away from somebody when they're showing you shit on the computer.
Well, he's probably bragging, right? Saying had shown her hundreds of images. Well, I guess
see keeping my mouth shut until I can walk away and call the cops.
Yeah. Rawls' smartphone. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm with RU. This is when you hit them with a brick and call the cops before they wake up. But
yeah. Sorry, one image. Like, if someone goes, "Hey, man, come check this shit out." Click, click. The fuck, dude. I got hundreds of them. And sleepy time. You know.
Oh. I hope they lock this guy in a very deep hole and forget where they put the key. Rawls' smartphone also contained approximately 20 photographs focusing on the genitals of his 6-year-old niece.
Oh.
Dude, they don't need those hard drives. They've got enough.
Yeah, dude, just let him out in the street. Broadcast it.
So prosecutors may be able to piece together enough evidence to convict him even without access to his encrypted drives. One of the two judges who formed the Third Circuit's majority urged the trial court judge to consider the 4 years of imprisonment Rawls has already served if he eventually has to sentence Rawls after a child porn conviction. One judge, Jane Richards Roth, dissented from last week's appeals court ruling. Roth argued that Rawls wasn't being asked to testify at all, and hence the 18-month limitation didn't apply. She argued Rawls was merely being asked to comply with a search warrant. The government's ability to execute search warrants and a judge's ability to hold people in contempt for ignoring them can be traced back to a 1789 law called the All Writs Act. Roth argued that this law, not the 1970 law about compelled testimony, should govern the Rawls case, and it doesn't impose a time limit on persons being held for contempt. It's not clear that Congress intended the provisions of the statute to limit the power of the courts to hold individuals such as Rawls, the recipient of a valid search warrant, in civil contempt. Roth wrote, Rawls is not a witness, as his contempt relates only to the decryption order, replying that he complied with the government search warrant by producing his devices in a fully unencrypted state. Well, I don't disagree with the government being able to issue, you know, a search warrant for the unencrypted contents of a drive, but getting that contents is where things get weird, you know.
Because I'm accused of that, man. I'm fucking. What do you want? All right, let's go through this motherfucker with a fine tooth comb, and I want to publish a statement that you found nothing at the end. Thanks.
Well,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, and what always kills
this,
me
this
is
this is not the hill to die on for encryption.
No.
You know what I mean? I'm suspected of child porn, but God damn it, I'm going to hold fast on my encryption rights.
Well, that's the thing that bothers me about this, is that it's always a child porn case. It is always a child porn case.
Yeah, that's not the hill to die on for encryption.
Well, you got to think, people that are willing to spend years in jail fighting something either have shit tons of money and really high moral standards, or a lot to lose.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of people with shit tons of money, and even fewer people with high moral standards. So you're not going to find the guy that they're getting him for bootleg copies of, I don't know, Alice in Wonderland, and he just doesn't want to decrypt his hard drive because he doesn't want to go to jail for 6 months and face paying Disney $100,000. Now you're going to get somebody that's facing death in prison to hold out.
I guess. I mean, and of course, I'm thinking about it too from the standpoint of all of the encrypted devices I have. If a judge hands me a warrant, says we need the unencrypted, I'm going to give it to him. You know. Because I know what's on them, and I know there's nothing on there that it's going to get me in trouble.
I like encryption because I don't want criminals to steal my money or weirdos to look at my medical history.
Right.
I don't have a problem with judges.
Most of my encrypted drives are backups of things like password vaults, reports from work that have confidential information in them, and my taxes. So it's like... It's like, yeah, no, I have legitimate reason to encrypt some of this stuff from work because it's vulnerabilities and reports and shit like that that's a big deal, right? But, you know, if a judge says it, it's like they're going to get it because it's like, you know? I mean,
yeah.
But, I mean, you're right. I guess it's always going to be somebody with a lot to lose, but I really would love to see one of these cases where it's not fucking child porn, because then it's like, I agree that you have rights to your encrypted data and protecting that data, but then you always have to defend some kitty diddler. Well, I guess I don't know that this guy's a kitty diddler. Maybe he just wanted to watch, but I mean, for fuck's sake, you know,
I don't care either way.
I'm going, there's he's on his way.
Well, it sounds like they've got him dead to rights otherwise, so fine. But also, I really hate that they don't detail what kind of encrypted drives he has, because depending on what they are, I mean, I skipped several stories this week about various intelligence agencies having all kinds of backdoors and ways into shit, and it's just one of these things where obviously they haven't sent it up to the right people to get it decrypted. Either they don't think they need to, or, you know, it's not worth the effort, but...
Well, now that they have to try them, they may think it's worth the effort. But I believe initially, since they already had a judge saying, let him rot in prison, why waste the money? When all you're going to do is have him rot in prison anyway.
Well, they've said that, you know, that 18-month limitation applies, so... I guess if you're a criminal and you're looking at however many years for conviction based on whatever's on the disc versus 18 months for contempt, you're going to have a lot of people opting for that 18 months of contempt, I guess.
Now the prosecutors will have more of a reason to call up the FBI and everyone else and be like, come over here and look at this and see if you've got the key to it.
Or, you know, do a little bit more evidence gathering before you arrest the guy and take him to court. You know, if you suspect you're going to be dealing with encrypted disks, like, say, the sister-in-law calls you and says, yeah, he's got encrypted disks, you know, work with... of course, this is what the point Ari was making, where they don't have ideas on standards and best practices of maybe get a keylogger on that box and try to procure those passwords before you let the guy know you're checking into him, you know?
Yeah.
I know I've done investigations in the past, and of course I do corporate work, but where, yeah, that was a thing, and yes, we did, and yes, we did.
And well, with usually there's not an issue of anyone saying they're not allowed to do that. I wonder if you can get a court order to put a keylogger on a computer.
Why not? You can get a court order to wiretap somebody. If you can get a court order to wiretap somebody, why would it be any different on a computer?
Yeah, it shouldn't be. That's what I said. Maybe the law is still untested or untried around this area.
Well, certainly untested. I think that's certainly the case. And again, this comes back to a properly executed search warrant kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we all know that process gets abused too. So that's, you know, nothing's perfect. You can't. I mean, I don't know what the answer is.
FISA courts run perfectly.
As far as that goes, the properly executed search warrant, if it's not properly executed, you can challenge that in court.
Yeah.
They get thrown out, I'm not going to say all the time, because generally cops are trying to catch bad guys, and they're not usually cutting corners, because they want to catch the bad guy. It just does happen. I know it happens, because I'm not an idiot. But, we already have the remedy is challenge it in court, get it thrown out.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm not opposed to the idea of the cops being able to put a keylogger on your machine if they have a warrant. But the thing is, I am opposed to the idea that the cops should have access to your machine 24/7 to be able to install said keylogger just in case they get a warrant. You know, of course, then the question becomes, well, how do you put it on there? Well, there are ways, you know, usually involving subterfuge, but, you know, it involves a bit of work, and it would probably involve getting somebody close to them to plug a device into the machine, like, you know, or, you know, doing an email phishing, get their email address and send them a phishing link kind of thing. We were talking about it earlier. People still fall for that shit all the time. So, you know, I'm not opposed to the cops being able to use the same methods I use when I'm doing corporate work. You know, if they have a warrant, I am opposed to the idea of giving them backdoor access to everything all the time. Because then,
say the warrant they just bust into your house and stick the keylogger on there. You have a warrant to put a keylogger on your computer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a practical problem of if you bust in the house, plug something in the computer, and then say, now log into all your shit, I'm going to say no.
Oh, no, they'll wait till you go to work and then have a locksmith open your door.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, that's how they would do it, right? I mean, they'd, you know, go to your computer, install the keylogger, and if you've got your computer properly, you know, secured and set up so that somebody else can't access it when it's off, when, you know, you've got it all locked down, well, then they've just got something else to contend with. But there are actually, a hardware keylogger is a thing. You can get little devices that you just put on the USB port between the keyboard and the computer. Is it as clean as a software keylogger? No. You can get USB rubber duckies and other devices like that, where you just leave it plugged into the back of the computer, and when they turn it on and log in, it sees that activity and activates and installs shit. You know, there are a lot of options.
One other interesting thing. The appeals court judge asked trial judge to consider the 4 years he's already served as part of sentencing. The trial judge doesn't have to do that. He could have just wasted 4 years of his life and it goes towards nothing.
Let's hope so.
Not that I'm crying about, you know, that happening.
No. Use parallel construction with a password cracker, the known password. Yeah, I've done the parallel construction thing in the past. Actually, Madman, do you remember the software in high school they used to lock down the machines?
Yes.
Do you remember that Taylor and I replicated a school image at home to crack the software?
I remember you telling me about it.
Yeah.
I remember that it didn't block WhiteHouse.com. And that's a porn site.
Yep, that's how we put Quake 2 on the school's file server. Evil Santa, because that was my copy of Quake 2.
And several of the teachers enjoyed playing it.
I don't care. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, none of the students deemed to show me that one. But our physics teacher... Like, check this out. I'm like, oh, sweet. And then I find out we were playing competitively, semi-competitively, against a rival high school in the area.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, it was me and one other guy in class always won those Quake matches, and it was always great, good times. Anyways, So let's see. I don't know. Is there anything else to say on this one?
No.
Because I feel dirty defending a child porn guy. I would really like for... I can't think of a decent person that would have this problem, though.
Well, not in the United States, because we've got free speech laws. You know, if it's somebody in some, you know, shithole country, to borrow a phrase from our president, where you don't have the freedom of speech and you've got dissenting information on that drive, but these are countries that are going to be a lot less likely to respect your encryption rights, so it's kind of a catch-22.
And they might not have the best evidentiary procedures.
Pretty sure China's just going to chuck you in prison anyways, so... Or, you know, declare that you've got the Kung Flu and lock you up in one of those hospitals with the locks on the outside and no foundation.
Just check to see if anybody on the Rogan recipient list needs you.
And speaking of games, Cykros in the IRC, apparently Minecraft just put out a GPS-style game a la Ingress and Pokemon Go.
Ingress was fun. Not enough people got hit by cars in Pokemon Go.
All right, next article. This one's for PCGamer.com. Max, now twice as likely to get infected by adware than PCs, according to research.
Huh.
What? But Max don't get viruses. I still hear that. At work, I still have people arguing with me that they don't need the security software because it's a Mac.
Not anymore. Mobile computing was overtook by Macs. They're targets now.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. There was a time when Mac computers were virtually invulnerable to malware. No, they weren't. That safety has long been one of the major talking points for Macs, or major talking points for Macs over Windows PCs. But as time has gone on and malware detection on PCs has gotten much, much better, Windows has gotten much more secure, and you're just as safe today using a PC over a Mac, perhaps safer from certain kinds of malware. As Macs have taken a larger piece of the computer market pie, they've become juicier targets for cybercriminals cranking out adware and what Malwarebytes calls potentially unwanted programs. So that would be your ad-based shit.
Potentially unwanted programs. I love that phrase.
Yeah, they've been using that for a while because it's like it's not a virus. It's not going to destroy your machine, but it is going to pop up an ad every 15 minutes and send all of your mouse movements off to some ad farming agency. While these threats are not, or toolbars, usually toolbars is the common, most common, you know, potentially unwanted program. You know, your Internet Explorer search bars that get installed, and, you know, you always love seeing that screenshot of the old IE6 with so many toolbars you couldn't even use it. While these threats are not considered as dangerous as traditional malware, they are becoming a much larger and more noticeable nuisance for Mac users, who can no longer say that their beloved systems are immune from malware, Malwarebytes Lab said in a recent report. Well, that's not going to stop them. They're still going to say they don't get viruses. You forget, most Apple users are in a cult. When calculated in threats per system, Mac-targeted threats outpaced Windows in nearly 2-to-1 in 2019. The full report details over 400% rise in overall Mac-related threats for consumers and businesses in 2019, and a significant rise in detections per system from 4.8 in 2018 to 11 in 2019. That's double the detection on Windows PCs, which was 5.8 in 2019. Cyber criminals have also been able to target Macs more aggressively because of Apple's built-in security has not cracked down on adware and potentially unwanted programs to the same degree that they have malware, making it easier for malicious software to infiltrate computers with Mac operating systems. In general, most Mac threats are different forms of adware and pups, but Malwarebytes notes in its report that a pair of Mac threats appeared at the top of its rankings for most widespread malware for the first time ever, coming in at second and third place. One of those, PCVARC, a generic name for system optimizers or junk cleaners that claim to make your system faster, was only 31 in the list of 2018. PCVARC was accounted for around 25 million malware attacks on Macs last year, and it was the top adware. New Tab, which accounted for 30 million attacks in 2019. Or at the top was Adware New Tab. Okay. Might help to read that correctly. The top threat for Windows PCs, in contrast, was Adware.Mindspark, which rose 497% from 2018 to 2019, but only accounted for 2 million infected consumer PCs. Adware.Yantu accounted for over 3 million infected business PCs, and while Trojans and other more serious forms of malware dominate the PC landscape, adware attacks are fastest growing malware attacks on both the PC and Mac sectors. The only difference is that Windows PCs are much better at catching the threats. So it's not so much that Macs are bad at malware, it's that Windows has gotten so beaten up it's had to get better. But, yeah. Yeah, you're still going to have that argument, oh, Macs don't get viruses. Yeah, they do. all computers have malware. Linux machines have malware. It's just, you know, how often does the risk intervene with the opportunity of a threat actor to, you know, actually cause an attack or an incident?
Yeah, but malware doesn't install itself.
Not as much as it used to. It used to.
Yeah.
In some cases,
I know it used to, but it doesn't now. You've got to pretty much be the one, the dumbass, to fucking click on it and download it.
It depends on what kind of systems you're talking about. If you're talking about web servers, yeah, it installs itself.
On a web server.
You know, in Macs, because they're running Unix under the hood and used by developers a lot of times, will have various services turned on, web servers, SSH, things like that, that most of the time you won't see on Windows PCs. So Macs actually could have malware install itself onto them, much like you would see attacks on servers, depending on, you know, are they on the internet directly, are they going through a firewall, ports forwarded, things like that. So it's... The idea that you know, oh, I use this system so I'm safe from malware is ludicrous. If you're really, really worried about, you know, malware, like if I'm going to go do something dumb, I spin up virtual machines, do what I need to do, and then either copy the data off in a format that I know is safe or just don't, and then destroy the VM when I'm done. Live CDs and VMs are great ways to operate. Tails and things like that. Psychros says he uses a Commodore 64, so he's safe from malware. That's true. That machine does not have enough memory to run malware. You can
There's an Indian guy somewhere that will argue with you about that.
Yes, there is. He called me. It was hilarious. That was great. Sorry, the computer, your computer has a virus, a Windows virus. The computer I'm using right now. Yes, I'm using a Commodore 64 right now. The network card I was using had more processing power than the actual computer. He goes, yes, sir, that one, because he didn't know what a Commodore 64 was. And at that point, I was impressed. It's like, I want to meet the man who wrote a Windows virus that runs on a Commodore 64. That sounds like somebody whose hand I should shake. And the guy hung up on me. I don't think he understood.
No. Dude, they haven't even got toilet paper yet, let alone a fucking Commodore 64.
I still think we ought to be starting off kids on 8-bit micros and not giving them iPads and computers.
I think so too, man. You should have to learn what's under the hood.
I think they should at least have to learn multiple operating systems.
So.
But anyway, moving on.
Moving on. Next article is from CNET. I believe this is one RU sent me. Get that attribution in the show notes. U.S. finds Huawei has backdoor access to mobile networks globally, the report says. Chinese tech giant Huawei can reportedly access the networks it helped build that are being used by mobile phones around the world. It has been using backdoors intended for law enforcement for over a decade. Remember what I was saying about not building backdoors into systems? The Wall Street Journal reported Tuesday, citing U.S. officials. The details were disclosed to the UK and Germany at the end of 2019 after the US had noticed access since 2009 across 4G equipment, according to the report. The backdoors were inserted for law enforcement use into carrier equipment like base stations, antennas, and switching gear, the journal said, with US officials reportedly alleging that they were designed to be accessible by Huawei. We have evidence that Huawei has the capability capability secretly to access sensitive and personal information in systems it maintains and sells around the world, Robert O'Brien, national security advisor, said. O'Brien also called less expensive Chinese solutions tempting of a gift to turn down for some countries. Tempting of a gift to turn down. That's a weird phrase there. According to CNN, but they come with a price of the Chinese company having access to information on the network. Huawei denied the report, saying it's the U.S. government that's been covertly accessing telecom networks worldwide, spying on other countries. Well, we know the government's been doing that. That's what those backdoors were
called
for.
Called the PRISM program.
PRISM program, Five Eyes, yeah.
Yeah. And, but no, you're a fucking conspiracy theorist if you talked about that 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, say anything about a FISA court 10 years ago, and you're a fucking nutter. Say anything about Huawei putting in back doors. Oh, you're a racist. You don't like the Chinese. Yeah, the fucking cows have come home to roost now, you fuckwits.
Thank you, Edward Snowden.
Sorry.
No, you're fine.
I just get really pissed when I see articles and I'm telling people like 10 years ago, this is crazy, man. You're not going to believe this. And now it's like just mainstream media. But if I could see it, how come the fucking government couldn't see it?
Because you were paying attention, which makes you dangerous.
Many governments have seen it. They just ignore it or the price is too good.
Yeah.
Like right now, England's talking about letting them build out their 5G network because they're wanting them to build the civilian side. They're like, we can annex off the government side. Like, I don't know if that's the way it would work. I mean, I don't know enough about networking to argue with the talking head on the television. But I think if something in your network is compromised, it can talk to other shit in your network.
It depends on how your network's architected.
This is where first world governments are failing right now. And I had this discussion a couple of days ago with a guy. We are not teaching our own people how to put our infrastructure in. we're bringing in other people from other nations constantly because they're cheaper price, and they're building our networks. So what happens if network goes to shit and they don't want to help us? We've got no qualified people, or at least not enough qualified people to handle a massive problem. I firmly believe from the wires going into the ground to the server farms being put in, it should be people within that nation building it for the nation. I don't mean as in the government owns it and runs it all, but let's keep it in-house. Why do we need China to put it in? I know it's fucking cheaper. I mean, why do you need... I don't know, man.
Well, maybe even if the equipment is cheaper, you still need people who understand how it's set up.
This is what I'm saying. Why can't we just buy the gear and install it ourselves? Why do we have to buy it and have them install us?
The issue is the gear is coming pre-pumped.
I know, Madman. That's my solution around this.
Well, the idea would be that... Okay. As a really good, fun example here. All of us, if you buy, acquire, steal, whatever, a computer, what's the first thing you do with it?
I format it and put the version of whichever operating system I currently like using on it.
Right.
Open it up, check someone hasn't stashed half a pound of weed in there, then reformat it, and yeah.
Yeah. But, with networking equipment, they almost never do that. They almost never go in and format them. They accept the firmware on the device as is, even though that firmware is functionally an operating system. Now, the reason for that is, unlike a general-purpose computer where your operating system is a separate product, and a lot of this networking gear, the operating system is just kind of part of it. You know, Cisco has their iOS, Cisco OS, which they, make confusing on purpose, so you have to buy their certification training. For a while, there were some open source alternative firmwares you could run. A lot of people suspect Huawei of having stolen some of the early gen Cisco firmware to start with and then forking it from there. The problem is
it's
firmware,
not the software.
Yeah, well, the problem is if that software has already got backdoors in it that you don't know about and no way to mitigate, even if I did format it and put a fresh firmware on there, I don't have an independent source to get that firmware from.
I'm talking about just the hardware side of it, Morps.
The firmware is the hardware side.
Yeah.
The firmware is what lets the hardware run.
Yeah.
And Huawei issues Huawei firmware. So in order for them, whenever Australia is building a Huawei system, they're not having Chinese people come over and put the wires in.
Well, sometimes
in.
They are,
think
actually.
Think twice, Morps. Think twice, Madman, because that's what is happening.
Okay, well, in the U.S., when we're building a Huawei system, we're ordering the parts. They're shipping over. Our techs are putting them in.
No.
That's my argument, man.
That's not
what
the case.
We should be doing.
That's not always the case. So usually, and I've been on multiple ends of this kind of stuff, right? So what usually ends up happening is you buy a piece of networking equipment. Usually the company that sells you that networking equipment is going to sell you a certain amount of support hours with that equipment, and as part of the contract for buying the equipment initially, because the shit's expensive, they will have their techs come in and help you do the initial install. That's common with corporate networking. So with stuff like Huawei, especially with some of this gear being so specialized, they probably do bring in specialized technicians who know the Huawei gear and know how to configure it for a specific environment, spend a few months with them, getting them up to speed on what the environment is, what the requirements are, all that good stuff, and then, work with them to have them train their in-house people on how to manage the system. But a lot of times that configuration is still done ahead of time. Remember what BSV was complaining about with those industrial controllers? Or was it BSV or was it SWAV?
Yeah.
Maybe it was SWAV. Who was complaining about one update and they rearranged all the programs. Well, that's because they want you. They want to. It was SWAV, was saying that, hey, no, if you install this update, suddenly you have to reprogram all of your stuff. Well, that's probably as much so that the company selling it can sell you consulting hours to go get all your programs fixed. Because they do that, especially when nobody else supports the gear. With general purpose stuff, you know, compared to somebody who's a Cisco specialist or a Juniper specialist or a Palo Alto specialist, Windows and Linux specialists are a dime a dozen. And then when you realize how uncommon, you know, proper sysadmins are, you realize what I'm talking about with, you know, how rare proper networking engineers are. So they probably are bringing in people who are specialists on this hardware to at least do the initial configuration and get it in place. And the real problem is not so much that they're having a third party do it, wherever that third party's from. It's that it's not properly vetted. It's not properly documented. And when they come back in to change something in the future, they have to bring these same companies back in to make the changes because they don't have anybody capable of supporting it. Now, whether that's along nation-state lines or whatever lines you want to draw, it's still a problem because whatever that organization is now dependent on the other organization to support that networking infrastructure. And as far as what you were talking about, Madman, with stuff having access to other stuff once it's in a network, it depends on how that network's architected. Well, a lot of times when you're talking about these consumer carrier networks, there's a few layers to them. You'll have the part of the network that the customer traffic actually goes across, and that's usually your largest, then you'll also have usually an out-of-band type of connection that's for your management interfaces. This might be something as simple as a VLAN. Usually it's a little bit more segmented than that. Depends on what kind of gear you're running, whether it's a virtual segmentation or two actual physical connections. But on most... corporate and you know, enterprise grade equipment, you'll actually see multiple Ethernet jacks on the back, and one of them is going to be labeled management. Best practice is to run a separate switch stacks for all those management ports, so that if somebody on your data lines or where your business applications live, or in the case of these cell carriers where all your consumer data lives, is doing something screwy, it's an entirely separate physical system to get into the management side of the house. But that's expensive, and most companies don't do it. They, you know, opt for virtual segmentation or even just address segmentation, where you just have to know that, oh, this is over here on the .15 network instead of the .20 network, and there's nothing to actually stop you from going to it if you know it's there or can, yeah, you know, operate in map.
I think we move straight to Dojo, man, and wrap it up. You got about 5 minutes left. You're getting rougher and rougher by the second, dude.
I can't help it. I've still got some stories. I've got to cover the last two stories because they're hilarious.
Oh, we should have got. I should have seen if I could get Kaz on here for this. He actually does this type of network config, or at least did before the military scooped him.
Okay. Moving on. You need to install Bonsai Buddy in a virtual machine and use it to read the stories. That's what we want. A computer voice just reading all this shit. Why not? That and
telling you support the robot uprising.
We do support the robot uprising. My voice goes, and it occasionally just starts reading out instructions for making C4.
I love that. Fucking amazing.
Oh, Madman didn't believe me when I told him I could make the computer talk in a somewhat convincing voice, and I needed appropriate instructions, so I went with something I thought he could validate.
Wait, I'm going to prison, but this is great.
Next article is from the Seattle Times. A man walked down a street with 99 phones in a wagon. Google Maps thought it was a traffic jam.
Ah, fucking win. Guy's a fucking genius.
The streets were shaded with the dreaded dark red on Google Maps, warning drivers of a traffic nightmare. In reality, though, almost no one was on the road except for a lone man pulling a little red wagon with 99 smartphones.
Fucking tip my hat, man.
Apps such as Google Maps provide real-time traffic data through crowdsourcing, monitoring the location and speeds of phones traveling along a roadway. The assumption, as noted by Ars Technica, is that the phones are there because they're being carried by drivers inside cars. Usually a bunch of slow-moving phones could be safely interpreted to mean gridlock. But in this case, the traffic jam was apparently the work of Simon Weckert, a Berlin-based artist. He called it a Google Maps hack. Performance art meant to demonstrate the pervasive real-life influence of modern technology. People are trying to think about and start to talk about what does it mean to use these services in everyday life, Westcott, 30, told the Washington Post, and how they shape our everyday life and how more generally they shape our everyday society. So it goes on and on and on. But basically, yeah, this guy was screwing with all these different traffic systems by chucking 100 phones in a red wagon and walking down the street.
Fucking brilliant, man.
And making all the map services think that it was just something horrible happening there.
That is brilliant.
I loved it.
I'll give you. Yeah, well done, sir.
And in the last article, this is from abc.net.au. RU sent me this one. Let's see. Puerto Rico's government has lost more than U.S. $2.6 million after falling for an email phishing scam. The finance director of the island's industrial development company, Ruben Rivera, said in a complaint filed to the police on Wednesday that the agency sent the money to a fraudulent account. Mr. Rivera said the government agency transferred the money on January 17th after receiving an email that alleged a change to a bank account tied to remittance payments, according to a police statement. This is the same old email scam where somebody gets in, watches these messages, and sends fake wire transfer instructions. I don't know why people believe email. You should always confirm any kind of significant business instructions like wire transfer changes over the phone or some other way besides just email. If you get an email saying we're changing the wire transfer instructions, send the millions of dollars to this account, somebody should pick up the phone and double check it with an actual person. Don't trust email.
Great.
I'm
tipping my hat to that guy as well. Dude, the big dick moment fucking hitting an actual sovereign nation. Well played.
I always thought it was hilarious when they were trying to get my bank. No idiot would fall for it. And now we have states. Well, almost states falling for this shit.
Governments are made up of the same people.
I've said that I want the people that are running our government to be smarter. I think they should be smarter than me.
Yeah, I think that too, Madman, unfortunately.
I deal with this state shit of all the time at work, man. You know, it's like, you need to call and verify wire transfer instructions. Oh, we don't have time for that. If we get them, we just have to accept them. Look at this. It's Photoshopped. The text doesn't even match. The wire transfer account is in Comic Sans. The rest of the account is obviously scanned and handwritten. What the fuck? Oh, wow. My voice really is going.
Yeah. Wrap her up, man.
All right. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. Both of them are related to gaming on Linux. Laser's been asking me about this lately, which got my interest piqued and started looking it up again. Two major resources for you tonight. The first, you're probably aware of if you've been looking into this, but if you've not, it's a good resource. It's called Lutris. Lutris is it's kind of billed as a Steam for Linux, but instead of being Steam directly, it's kind of a wine management system. So it sets up your wine configs, your bottles, and the libraries for running various games from Steam, Battle.net, Origin, GOG, Uplay, or just manually installed stuff so that you're able to play these Windows games on Linux, and this kind of manages a lot of the back-end configuration for you, which is pretty nice. And then the second resource I have for tonight is protondb.com. Proton is the translation library that Valve has been working on Linux for translating DirectX to Vulkan. And So between Proton and Steam Play, this gets a lot of games working. And so this is a database of various games and software that works under this setup and shows you the reports of, you know, what's working: platinum, silver, gold, bronze, and through there. So if you're looking to maybe move off of Windows and onto Linux full time, and you've got a handful of games you want to play, this might be a way for you to check and see how feasible is that for you to do. So, again, if you're longtime Linux gamers, you're aware of these resources. But if you're not, if you're just looking into it, these are good things to be looking into. That's all I have for tonight. My voice is about to go away completely, so tomorrow's going to be really fun on all the meetings I have. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday, the Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, myself, Sardonyx, Psychros, DPView, and Madman. Madman, closing thoughts.
The world's a wonderful place, and thank God there's bourbon.
Thank God there's bourbon. Are you? Closing thoughts.
I don't really have any.
All right. Well, I'm going to hit the sound effects on the board and close this out for tonight.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Welcome to the rice fields.
Sorry, I'm white. I'm sorry, I'm male. Why? Why am I a monster?
Down to go nose down and call the night.
Shut up, Wesley.